On WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. This is Rick Knowlton with your WSLR News Headlines for Thursday, July 31st, 2025. There's been a data breach at Alligator Alcatraz. The secretive detention center has had its visitors' data stolen and distributed among the facility's inmates. Said one visitor, "What about this information that's out there? There's, what, 1,600 there? They all have information. God knows what they could do with it." Regarding the breach at Alligator Alcatraz, Denise Rock, Florida CARES executive director, texted, "We urge the department to discontinue requiring already approved visitors to register and release their private information each time they do so." According to the Florida Communications and Research Hub, Alligator Alcatraz is not a popular development in Florida. Among those surveyed, those with negative opinions outnumbered positive ones by 8 percentage points, while those who reported strong views were about twice as likely to disapprove of the project as those who strongly approved. Florida Attorney General James Utmeyer is now going after what he calls the climate cartel, organizations that seek to find and share information regarding industrial climate impact. Utmeyer is launching investigations into the CDP, a nonprofit, and CPTI, a company co-founded by several groups, including the Worldwide Fund for Nature. The Attorney General proclaimed, "Radical climate activists have hijacked corporate governance and weaponized it against the free market." The 30% tax credit for home solar panels is set to expire at the end of this year, a result of the so-called Big Beautiful Bill recently pushed through the U.S. Congress. Solar companies report booming sales as homeowners now rush to install solar panels before the tax incentive expires. This has been Rick Knowlton with your WSLR News Headlines for Thursday, July 31st.
5, 4, 3, 2. Welcome to The Detail. I'm your host, Kathy Antunes, and you are listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1. LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. The views and opinions expressed by hosts, guests, and callers on WSLR programs are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of WSLR, its staff, or volunteers. And programming at WSLR is supported by listeners like you and by Ringling College Galleries and Exhibitions. Ringling College's 2024-25 exhibition season features art from Ringling students, alumni, faculty, and nationally recognized artists from a wide range of mediums and from diverse backgrounds. More information is available at ringlingcollege.gallery. Thank you all so much for joining us. Thank you to everyone on Facebook who will be watching this. You can see it in the Citizens for Sarasota County page. And we are going to be talking today about the law in Florida regarding marijuana, regarding medical marijuana. And also, what are you really buying when you're getting some CBD or hemp products over the counter? My guests today know all about this subject. Joining me is Dr. Barry Gordon, a physician practicing at the Compassionate Cannabis Clinic, and his practice administrator, Ruta Juinari. Thank you both so much for joining me.
Thanks for asking us. It's an honor to be here with you.
Absolutely. So Ruta and I were having a discussion, just friendly discussion last week, and she started telling me about how the law changed this season or this legislative session regarding medical marijuana. And, you know, Dr. Gordon, I had no idea about these changes. So I'd like you all to walk us through them. And also, you know, just want to get a basic understanding of where medical marijuana really makes sense and works. You know, what's happening when you buy these over-the-counter products? There's really a lot to talk about. But let's just start out with what happened to the law this legislative session, and why are you both concerned?
Yeah, sure. You know, Kathy, it's interesting to talk just about this year. I think we need to put a little bit of a base to the wall, to the extent that, you know, we've been open for 8 years now, 8.5 years now. And we surely would not have a medical cannabis program like we have here in Florida at this point if we wouldn't have voted on it all the way back in the election of November of 16.
Mm-hmm, right.
So Florida was still kind of purple back then, you know, and we were able to pass the medical on a second try also in the constitutional amendment process. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it still needed that. You know, 60%, of course, 70% voted for it. Anyway, we've been open for 8.5 years. So I like to say that the revolution of medical cannabis was 25 to 30 years ago.
Yes.
It was brought back into the House of Medicine. A lot of that had to do with the HIV/AIDS crisis out in California and things of that nature. But my point is now we're in what I call the evolutionary phase of mm-hmm. cannabis. Legal here, illegal there, medical there. The products have changed, and I know we're going to talk extensively about that, about what you see when you drive down 41 and you see the big THC, no card needed signs, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Versus the medical dispensaries, you know, that are recognized by the state. So the point is that it's an ever-evolving space mm-hmm. right now, and what you're referring to are some of the changes that were undertaken in Tallahassee that we're looking at specifically the hemp space right this year, which is a space that was created, and there's a history, and listen, it could be a whole program in itself. When the Farm Bill was passed in the first Trump administration, that allowed for the growth of the hemp side of the cannabis plant back on the farm. And the hemp side.
And can I just ask a really basic question?
Absolutely.
What is the difference between hemp and cannabis?
Genetics. Okay. Genetics. It's all one plant species.
Okay.
The hemp side of the family is the low Delta 9, and that's really important to make that distinction these days, Delta 9 THC side of the family. Cannabis, sativa as it's called, that's the high THC side of
okay.
the cannabis family. So the point is the hemp side was also suppressed for a number of years, and then that was allowed to, once again, started to be grown on the farms. CBD, very important. Delta 9 THC is the main intoxicant in the cannabis family of plants. CBD leads the way of the non-intoxicating side of the plant. What we've learned is the great medicinal benefits of the non-intoxicating CBD, anti-inflammatory, autoimmune, anxiety, depression. But because there is no intoxicant effect for it, it was never a factor through those years of interest.
Okay, so it does impact mood. Right.
It does impact mood, but not in an intoxicating fashion. So but the moral story
How would you say what's intoxicated versus just elevating your mood?
Well, that, you know what, Kathy, you asked such important questions early because it is about impairment.
Okay.
It absolutely is about impairment and the elevation of mood and or the relief of anxiety, mm-hmm. right? Other mm-hmm. psychoactive effects aren't necessarily impairment, right, nor intoxicating. So it's complicated.
Yeah,
it's
it complicated. Is.
And but the point is the CBD world, just to wrap that up, there became a glut of CBD because now all of a sudden the farmers could grow it. And when there's a glut, the prices go down. Mm-hmm. And literally that's what happened. They had to figure out what to do with the glut of the CBD hemp products. Mm-hmm. And the chemists got creative with people that don't quite have the same public interest in health and safety and testing. And that's where you saw what we call the synthetic cannabinoids of Delta 8, not 9.
Okay. I've seen those signs, the Delta 8 signs. Yeah.
And it's confusing. And even early on, I don't want to over-confuse our listeners to that extent.
Okay.
So there's three markets in the cannabis world. The legacy market, which used to be called the black market, right?
Okay.
Has always existed. Where that cannabis comes from, be it overseas or grown, you know, inside or outside, but it's illegal, of course.
And that's recreational for the most part or not?
So people would argue that, Kathy, because, okay, you know, many people have grown cannabis through the years for medicinal purposes,
mm-hmm,
against the law, of course. So the relief of anxiety at the end of one's long day can be called medicinal.
Yeah.
So recreational is an interesting term. We tend to use the term legal adult use.
Okay.
It allows for that recreational component, but also recognizes that people will use it for other purposes. But, mm-hmm, but the point is the natural plant cannabis as it comes out of the ground, right?
Right.
Is a Delta 9 THC intoxicant product, and then the other cannabinoids as well. The hemp side of the family is CBD prominent, with a very small amount of THC allowed on the underside.
And they're different but genetically related plants.
They're all genetically related. So it's about the breeding, and there's crossbreeding and there's hybrids. So it gets complicated. But the most important thing for our listeners today to take out of this particular show is that it's now not just pot, dope, weed, grass, right, as it may have been back in the old days. But now it's a whole spectrum of cannabinoids with THC, Delta 9 being the king or the queen, depending on what family you're in. I'm teasing. But the point is Delta 9 THC stands alone.
Yeah.
And then the other cannabinoids are a part over here of what's called an entourage.
Okay. Right? Entourage.
That's it. I make jokes in the clinic all the time.
Name.
One of my favorites is Michael. If you think about the Jackson 5.
Yes.
Right? And you got to be our age. Not really, because everybody knows Michael Jackson.
I watched them on American Bandstand. Yeah, the Jackson 5.
And
that dates me.
And when you watched him, Michael was 5, 6, 7, 8 years old.
Yeah.
And it was a small part of the entourage, the Jackson 5. But it was still a heck of a band.
Oh, yeah.
Michael is Delta 9 THC. That means that he had a whole bunch of Tito and Jermaine. And LaToya, all of them.
Uh-huh.
And where are the other cannabinoids?
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
On the other hand, Michael could be in a concert on his own, Delta 9 THC, and people are still going to pay big money to go see that concert. Maybe not so much just the others, if that makes sense.
So since we're talking about things that happened, you know, 50 years ago. Today's marijuana is very different, isn't it, from the stuff that was there in the 50s, the 60s, the 70s. And I'm interested, you know, for the person who's wanting or is engaging in not having a medical card, but they're buying this not from a dispensary, what could they be getting? And then versus, you know, there's a whole spectrum in your clinic. How do you standardize dosing? Because that's really, with any medicine, it's all about the dose. Something can be poison. There's a quote, poison can be nectar, nectar can be poison. It depends on the dose. So the challenge with a natural substance that you can't patent, you know, how do you standardize it versus stuff out there in this legacy market? What are people getting?
Sure. No, listen, that's always been the main. So cannabis is interesting because I like to say that it comes in through the back door of medicine. Cannabis is a plant. It's been around forever. And all societies have utilized it in certain ways. And actually, right. It was brought into the medical world from India by a doctor by the name of Dr. O'Shaughnessy, who brought it into Western medicine, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting to that extent. And we have many, many, many patients who come in. They've never used a cannabis product ever in their entire life. We call them doobie ones. Because they've never done. And I need to know. Right.
I've never done. Yeah.
The point is, you're not alone. And I need to know that so that when I take care of that patient, I can give the appropriate education to that patient. Because you're going to be entirely different a patient for me than Willie Nelson, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Willie is the exact opposite. Most people know that Willie or Snoop Dogg or Tom Song, right?
Big fans of the doobie.
They're doobie fours. Give them more, okay?
Yeah.
And listen, oftentimes they're the bank president, the chief of the hospital staff, the best attorney in town, okay? Mm-hmm. The correlation of success in life in cannabis consumption it's not what you think it would be.
Okay.
Because the more successful that you are in life, oftentimes you own the company, so nobody's drug testing you.
I see. Okay.
You reach a certain level of success that you're comfortable in your own skin.
Mm-hmm.
You married a cannabis gal. You have cannabis friends, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you have to stay out of law enforcement's way, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps stop now and again for a new job, or, you know, there's been a lot of things through the years that have kept cannabis consumers flying under the radar, so to speak.
Uh-huh.
But the point is, we have to know that so that we can recommend the appropriate education to the patient
treatment.
When they come in.
Yeah.
So when you talk dose, I come back at you and I say, quite frankly, we avoid dosing. Although we do discuss it with our newest patients so they know that start low and go slow.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have a patient over here who's never used it, and then your next patient can be somebody who consistently uses it, absolutely, that's what makes for the importance of the medical visit.
Yeah.
You'd be really intrigued when you hear, because you say you've never used cannabis. Well, I was an emergency room doctor for 34 years up in Ohio. Big city ERs. In my 34-year history in the emergency room environment, and it ended 9 years ago, I never saw a cannabis-related problem in the ER, ever. And people wonder how that can be, because now we do see them. And here's the difference.
Yeah.
The products have changed, right? So no child is going to smoke a marijuana joint. It doesn't happen that way, but they'll find gummies now.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
Adults also, in the old days, when you started to use cannabis for the first time, typically with your friends in high school or college or whatever, listen, you would be in a circle, you'd pass around the cannabis joint. I want to get back to the strength thing, too, that you mentioned a few moments ago. We will.
Yeah.
But the point is, in that circumstance, you take a couple puffs off the cannabis joint, and if you don't like it, it's going to be done in an hour. And then you're going to say to your friends, you know, I didn't really like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be the joint passer at the parties from now on, okay? So there's people like that.
Mm-hmm.
But they see other people who use it successfully, and they become doctors and lawyers and this and that. So my point is there's an entire spectrum of past use, and we respect everybody's desire when they come into the clinic to be a better cannabis consumer because they have medical desires, wants, and needs, right?
Yeah.
And we respect the plant to the extent that it was medicine long before Percocet, long before Ambien, long before Ativan, right? So our patients who are taking pharmaceutical medications, they don't want more. They want less. And we take great pride in teaching them how to do that. And that's a combination of the cannabinoids, both Delta-9 and the others.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the key. Kathy, different routes of administration.
Well, I was going to ask you about that because eating something, there are reports in medical journals. And again, you didn't used to see this, but I remember being on the field trip bus. We were going to some Broadway show and somebody brought a pan of brownies. And I'm like, I'm not doing that. But, you know, so ingesting something you know, there's different ways to deliver a medicine. You can smoke something, inhale it. You can put it on your skin. You can ingest it. And it's going through different parts of the body. Maybe it's being metabolized by the liver, just generally speaking. Maybe it's, you know, getting straight to your bloodstream. And there have been reports about people, well, certainly children ingesting gummies. That's an obvious risk. You know, they're going to think it's candy. But hang on. But sure. When people have ingested marijuana, and some of these brownies, you're only supposed to take a little bit. When people eat the whole thing, and then they actually become aggressive. It's not just, they're not mellow. They're angry. So tell me about all that.
Well, Kathy, whatever the effects may be, we don't want anybody weak. We don't want anybody dizzy. We don't want anybody falling. I don't want aggression. Okay. Yeah. And that's why that start low, go slow terminology is so important for those who have never used cannabis before. Mm-hmm. And I want to get back to the potency question that you had because, right. Yeah, absolutely. Cannabis today is different than cannabis was, you know, back in 1969, 1985, you know, whatever, however far back you want to go, because it's now processed. It's processed into concentrates and distillates, oral preparations. Okay. Mm-hmm. The plant itself, you'll hear people talk about how it used to be a 6 or 7% Delta 9 THC product. Now it can be 30% in the plant itself. Okay. And no doubt, you know, for those that really don't know cannabis world, that can seem like beer to grain alcohol to that extent, that potency difference. But in reality, to those that utilize cannabis appropriately, that newer product, cleaner, smells better, tastes better. You have to use less because there is more potency to it.
Sure. Right?
So it's good and bad. Same thing with the routes of administration. Good and bad. The beauty, and I make jokes about such things, mm-hmm. You know, listen, I have suppositories for the politicians I don't like, okay?
How do you administer that? That's tough to do.
No, in the original medical cannabis bill filed by Representative Ray Rodriguez at the time,
okay.
The only two routes available were oral and rectal routes. There was no vaping.
Okay.
There was no flower. There were no topicals.
Okay.
So we laugh about such things. But what you talk about, Kathy, is really important because that oral ingestion of cannabis absolutely is going to be a longer lasting experience.
Uh-huh.
It could be a much stronger, okay, experience because you mentioned that there is a metabolism in the liver, just getting to the doctor side of it. The Delta 9 THC that you take orally does convert in the liver to what's called 11-hydroxy-THC. Stronger in some people, longer lasting. There's genetics to it.
Okay.
But that's the second side to the no child ever smoked a joint joke, okay, is that adults in general don't start with an entire pan full of brownies,
right.
as their first cannabinoid experience.
Yeah.
Unless it's a movie plot, okay, with a comedic, you know, side to it. No, it can be someone who's inexperienced with cannabis going into the wrong place, be it a doctor office that doesn't educate, quite frankly, because that happens too. I don't want to just hold the hemp guys out as the only ones where this can happen. Or you can walk into the wrong, you know, hemp or CBD store or whatever and be sold the wrong product, quite frankly. And then it's 2:30 in the morning and you're high for the first time and you're looking up at the ceiling, heart rate elevated, anxious. You know what? Some of those people call 911, always to go home the next day, thank God. Okay?
Yeah.
But that's why there's ER encounters today where there weren't before.
Yes.
So we need to recognize that there are complications of cannabis. There is concern for the quote-unquote overdosing circumstance, which can be dangerous to children and to adults. Rare, if ever. You know, it's hard to say never anymore when it comes to death from cannabis.
Yeah.
And I don't like to participate in urban legend or, you know, fentanyl in the cannabis supply, but we know that's happened too. So we all have to keep our eyes open that there's unbelievable positives to cannabis in 2025, but there is a downside.
Yeah. Well, any drug that works, I was worked in pharma for 20 years, and any drug that has an impact, because it is having an impact on the body, there's the risk of a negative impact, and people's physiologies are different. So there's that too. You know, one of the questions I had regarding changes in the law, and you correct me if I'm wrong, that this legislature has determined that somebody who was arrested for possession, had a prior arrest for possession, does that impact their ability to get a medical marijuana card? I think, Ruta, you and I had talked about that. What's going on?
So the new legislation that was passed, it's not been put into effect yet, but it has been passed, was that anyone that had a criminal record, no matter the amount of cannabis, and had a prior record, would no longer be able to be a caregiver for someone with a medical card, and no longer would they be able to have a card. There was some gray areas to, are they going to grandfather the ones that already had cards, meaning there's patients that have been on the program for like 7 years, and there's still no clear determining language yet as to, are they going to be grandfathered in? So the problem is, you have people who are taking care perhaps of someone else, and they have a criminal record for possession 10 years ago. Well, that person now may no longer be able to care for his mother, who has stage 4 cancer, and giving her her medicine, her cannabis medicine. So it's kind of I don't think it was a good law. I don't think they truly understand the impact of that law. And getting back, I just want to touch a little bit back on the potency, because the legislators always bring this up year after year in session about the potency of cannabis and saying that it is much stronger than it was years ago. But I also want to touch upon still the CBD and hemp space. And people still think it's holistic or it's clean medicine when they go into a hemp shop, and it's not. And they have to truly understand that the CBD world is unregulated. I really want to hit.
I do too, but I because I do want to get to that. But just to go back to this idea that if you've been arrested for possession, that puts your ability to care for somebody at risk, that puts your ability to qualify for a card at risk. Mm-hmm. It seems so, it doesn't make sense.
It's all, listen, Kathy, I'd love to know who came up with that. Mm-hmm. That wasn't in the regular session. That came out later.
But it passed.
And what is it, waiting on the governor's signature?
Or? Yes. We've received no inclination from anybody about how it's going to be implemented, who's going to implement it, how they're going to track it.
It seems
like many things that come out of
Tallahassee.
I have no idea of the motivation of it.
Unless you want to drive people back into the legacy market in some sense, or create more arrests for minor possession. I don't know. It's a bizarre.
But the thinking that people are coming into a medical cannabis clinic to foster some type of diversionary, type of thing, it doesn't work that way. The amounts that the patients receive and the prices that they pay. So I don't know. To me, it's one of the reasons why we as the doctor group we have a doctor group that meets every third, fourth Wednesday, whatever. We've demanded, but they won't listen. We need a seat on an OMU type of, discussion panel, this, that. But, we have no seat at the table.
What's odd about this situation is, first, again, how unfair to somebody who may have been using marijuana and got arrested because they legitimately had a need for it. Or maybe they were just doing recreational use, but now they're going because they want to be under a physician's care like you and get this need met. And somehow you've got legislators deciding that because they did this in the past, which if it happened today, it just looks very unscientific, very vindictive. It doesn't make any sense, and actually punishes people who have a legitimate need for treatment. But What can people do? I mean, they can get in touch with their legislator or Tallahassee, because I think what's different with this is, and of course, science is so up in the air these days when it comes to healthcare and what's going on at the national level, but states are not used to regulating medication. This is not in their wheelhouse.
Well, it's interesting you said that, Kathy, because over the years, like the legislative sessions, when it comes to medical cannabis, you have these people and they're all coming out with their personal opinions, and none of it's based off of the physicians. And when the physicians, like Dr. Barry is a huge proponent, he's up there always, you know, arguing the case of medical cannabis, they give him 30 seconds. And they base their stuff of like pie in the sky. They don't use anything, or they use very selective process in which somebody is very anti-cannabis to be the spokesperson. Mm-hmm. And they take that data, but they don't take the physician who's treated 5,000 patients in a few years and had a huge benefits, or the scientist who's actually doing some research. So it's funny they give the physicians a 30-second blurb to state their case for the positive, and yet they make these laws which are insane. So it's very frustrating. I mean, Dr. Barry can answer to that.
It is frustrating, but I want to go glass half full for a second here, because when you've done this for eight and a half years, what we know is that, once again, going back to that evolution, we are so much better off now than we were 8.5 years ago, period. We get referrals from the cancer center. We get referrals from the pain management docs in the area. We've made the relationships with Sarasota Memorial, you know, hospital to that extent, to begin, hopefully, to have discussions with them. My ultimate goal is to be the director of the Division of Endocannabinoid Medicine, right, under the Department of Internal Medicine at Sarasota Memorial Hospital. We're probably 10 years off from that, and then I'll be 79 instead of 69, so I'll probably hobble around with my cane. But there's goals.
Yeah.
There's goals is the point.
Right.
And it's so much better now than it was 8.5 years ago. And if we keep our heads down, pay attention to the important things, seemingly 8.5 years from now, it'll be better than it is now, but there's no guarantees.
No. In fact, there was another crazy law that thankfully it didn't go through. Was to actually, now we see by state law, we have to see our patients every 210 days, and we have to, the first visit, they have to be in person, so the physician actually has physical contact with their patient. They wanted to introduce language that it could have been done all by telehealth, so the doctor never has to see a patient, and instead of seeing a patient annually for, you know, a recheck, every 2 years. Which, if you're taking any medicine or you're with any physician, usually even Medicare guidelines, you have to see the physician every year. And now all of a sudden, like you said, you have a bunch of legislators who shouldn't be legislating anything medicinal or even enter that arena are now wanting to make these kind of determinations, which are absurd.
Yeah.
So a huge frustration that they're not in their lane and they should stay in their lane.
Yeah, well, and I think it's an indication of who's filling their campaign coffers. You know, on one side, you've got, I don't know, these folks who want to clamp down, but the disconnect that they have, but the over-the-counter stuff, we want to not let people have it. We want to punish them. I wonder if that's the prison lobby that wants to fill jail cells or, you know, make more trouble. But then you've got the other folks, let them sell without any regulation. Let them sell without needing to see a physician. Let's expand the market for these.
Well, and
that's my opinion. I'm not saying it's yours.
But I agree with that. And I think the other thing that's kind of important to know is they're trying. The medical cannabis space is regulated, highly regulated, from growth of the product to testing to packaging to how they sell everything. Yet you have the other side that's totally unregulated with the hemp and CBD world.
Yes.
And yet the legislator, and there are products that are with molds and pesticides that have been banned, and people are inhaling and ingesting these, yet for some reason, the legislators are like, hands off of that. So you have to wonder, is the lobby coming from there for it? Like, where is it coming from? Because something's guiding them and misguiding them. And I think the dollars are misguiding them.
Yeah, and it's probably a bunch of things. But let's get directly to that, Ruta, because this is a huge area of danger, of trouble. It was uncovered, but well, there's a great article that you had shared with me, Ruta, in the Miami Herald. You can find it. It's called High Potency and Pesticides. Marijuana is being sold over the counter in Florida as hemp. And what these reporters did was they went to dozens of sources, bought samples of different products marketed as hemp. And it's, I'm just going to read from the beginning of the article here. It says, and this was a story that was written by Alexandra Glorioso and Claire Healy from the Herald Times, Tallahassee Bureau of the Miami Herald. They said vape stores and smoke shops around the state are selling illegal marijuana tainted with toxic pesticides, according to the results of testing performed last month by two labs on dozens of joints, vapes, and edibles purchased in stores from Tallahassee to Miami and online by the Herald Times. Many of the tested items all sold as hemp products, so it's supposed to be low concentration. That's registered with a potency that by legal definition classified them as marijuana. Some were contaminated with pesticides that are either banned outright or are unauthorized for use in the industry. The results delivered as Florida voters decide whether to legalize recreational marijuana, so this article was a few months ago, November 2024, reveal that the state's approximately $10 billion hemp industry is already selling marijuana over the counter in an under-regulated market that is allowing potentially dangerous products to slip through to customers. Okay. They go on to talk about the legal limit for THC concentration under Florida regulations is 0.3% of less of the Delta 9. To your point, Dr. Barry, as you said earlier, the amount of THC is really low. And these products were tested. Some had 22% total THC. There was one that a rechargeable vape pen, which I wouldn't even think you'd have this risk, 76.1% total THC, by far the highest amount among all the products tested.
Yeah, it's all about the testing, Kathy, and that's the facts. And that's, you know, that article's, that was pre-election time, you know, and it was so interesting because, you know, my stance for, as being a proponent for Amendment 3 in last November's election, was because of public health, public safety, public education, because of the fentanyl in the cannabis supply. Rare.
There's fentanyl in there?
Yeah, there's fentanyl.
No, not. So
there's a risk. There's a risk.
Fentanyl, but that's the legacy market side. But that can happen on that side, too.
Yeah.
But no, on the hemp side, it is the unregulated nature of it, the pesticides, the molds, the fact that the Delta 8 products almost always have more Delta 9 than they say, because that's why people are buying it. Delta 8 THC does not have the same intoxicating potency of Delta 9. It's not a key that fits, turns, and opens the door. It fits in the lock, but doesn't open the door. But it does something. So they put more 9 in there because that's why people are buying it. Those are quote unquote intoxicating type of products. It's important to know. There were bills passed in not this year's, but last year's session completely through both House and Senate to clean up that entire side of the cannabis market. And the governor vetoed it, right?
Wow.
He vetoed it, and then he had significant campaign donations into the anti-Amendment 3 campaign by the hemp side.
Yeah.
And Evan Power, who's, you know, big in, you know, is chief, you know, is the chief lobbyist for the hemp community.
So let me just give a little bit more information.
I'll get myself in trouble, I think.
What's that?
I said you please talk, or I'm going to get myself in more
no,
trouble.
No, no, no. I'm just reading from this article. Among 41 samples, these were hemp products tested for potency. 35 out of the 41 contained illegal total THC concentrations. In other words, they had well above 0.3%. 5 gummies and 1 vape were below the legal threshold. Every flower product purchased was too potent to be considered hemp under Florida regulations. Some contained potency levels comparable to the marijuana sold at the state's medical dispensaries. Among 26 flower and vape samples tested for pesticides, 12 failed. That's almost 50%.
That's the danger side, and it's not an acute, going to kill you today danger.
Yeah, okay? It accumulates in the body, right?
Also, when you process that CBD hemp product into the other synthetics, there's solvents left over. There's other byproducts left over. There's probably other cannabinoids that we haven't even discovered. So what you don't know is what you don't know. But what we do know is natural plant out of the ground product is natural plant out of the ground product. Everything else that's created synthetically, in my opinion, should be banned.
Yeah, so it says to your point.
Testing is the other side of it.
Yeah,
right?
hang on, though, because I just want to, this fits with the point you just said. The most common pesticide detected was a fungicide called myclobutanol, which is banned in Florida for inhalation and releases the toxic chemical hydrogen cyanide when vaped or smoked. So yeah.
If I can't pronounce it, typically it's not very good for me.
But I mean, if people know, because a lot of people who partake and they're thinking, I want to buy a natural product, you know, I want to do something natural for me. And then if they know that there's pesticides, that they're actually getting a much higher level of THC, and it's going to be metabolized in a way that would be entirely different if it were true, if it were plant, if it were like what you prescribe, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And then there were yeast and mold issues. So talk to me about testing. What should be happening, Dr. Berry?
Listen, every single product sold on the shelf anywhere in the state of Florida, I don't care, from gas station, and you can laugh. Listen, this is an entire another show, Kathy, or the hemp-derived Delta 9 beverages, okay, mm-hmm. that you're starting to see now in Total Wine and ABC Liquors, okay?
Yeah.
If you watched the legislative session this past year, you saw that big alcohol was big time involved in the discussion now, because you can convert the CBD once again into a Delta 9 hemp derived product and put it in a can and sell it as a drink now, right?
And
to a newbie, one can is 10 milligrams of Delta 9 THC. You shouldn't be driving after that.
It's amazing, because I go to this place just to get like a bowl, you know, one of these rice bowls, and they're selling a CBD or a hemp drink, and I'm thinking, what is this?
People are going to take advantage of the loophole in the farm bill. And it's really important, Kathy, when you talk about the flower products, they all test positive, okay, for THC in amounts higher than that 0.3 amount. What you'll see that they're selling in the smoke shop environment is what they're calling THCA. And that A is critical, because all cannabis in the unsmoked or not baked right form mm-hmm. is acidic. That is what the A stands for. You can eat an entire baggie, if you can stomach it, okay, of uncombusted cannabis flower and not feel a thing, okay?
Oh.
Seriously. That's why the juicing of cannabis that people sue for the right, Joe Redner, that's what he was suing for. People like to juice their cannabis in the raw form, because they get that what's called THCA acidic form, which has nothing to do with intoxication, but is a very powerful anti-inflammatory, very potent.
Oh,
right?
Wow.
The point is, the flower that's in the smoke shops,
yeah,
it hasn't been lit yet. It hasn't been combusted yet. So that's why they believe through the loophole that they can sell that flower, because the actual THC, because it hasn't been lit yet, is below 0.3%.
Wow.
In the gummy world, hang on, then when you light it, it becomes pot, dope, weed, grass. So it's a loophole.
Yeah.
And it's a well-known loophole. They just don't know what to do about it. In the gummy world, they get past that 0.3% limit by making a bigger gummy. So it's a 0.3% by weight.
Okay.
So they can put 10 milligrams, okay, into a gummy. It's just a bigger gummy. Or you can go to a community festival and sometimes get up to 30 milligrams, believe it or not, of Delta 9 in a shake.
Hmm.
So the loophole is the problem.
Well,
and the lack of testing, lack of testing is key, but also the potency of some of these products that are available over the counter at a festival, be it by somebody who wants to be intoxicated or, quite frankly, by somebody who's just looking for relief and not getting the appropriate advice, medical evaluation, you know, or honest discussion when you walk into that type of venue. So that's the critical nature of why the doctor role is important.
Yeah.
You know, especially for those patients who have never used cannabis before.
Yeah, so you've got, you know, obviously, I want to talk about your success stories with treating patients and how proper medical supervision and intervention with cannabis makes a big difference in people's lives. But before I get to that, you know, these hemp products that are well over the limit that are actually have cannabis marijuana levels of THC, recreational marijuana is illegal in Florida. And yet the legislature has been completely inept at regulating what essentially is a more dangerous form of recreational marijuana in being sold in gas stations, being sold in vape shops. It doesn't, you know, if they were truly had the true intention, I think, that they would be all over this, you know, that they would be looking at these products.
Right. I agree, you would think, but they don't.
Yeah, and they've been told now, no excuses. So, and yet I think this idea of putting someone in prison for marijuana use or just arresting them on the recreational side, it doesn't make sense when you look at the impact of alcohol, and why can't they just come up with a way to regulate this market so that their constituents aren't ingesting things that turn into cyanide in their body, you know, or levels that they don't think they're buying. I mean, they think they're buying something that doesn't have much THC. So it's really crazy. And I guess it's a great example of what happens when people just, and our legislature just has kind of an emotional look at all this, but not a scientific look at it. That just doesn't make sense. But Dr. Berry, you've done this now for a long time. You were an ER doc. You got into your clinic, Compassionate Cannabis. What kind of results do you see among your patients? Why do they come to you? What are they looking to be treated for, and what are their outcomes?
You know, I'm so glad we have a chance to wrap this way, Kathy, because when I first got into medical cannabis, I came into it from the social warrior side. I was an ER doc. I knew that people had used it for years. I didn't see the social impact from it. On the other hand, daily, of course, I saw alcohol issues in every ER I worked in. People are fascinated when I tell them for my first 16 years of my 34-year emergency medicine career, I think I probably saw about 6 combined narcotic overdoses in that entire early part of my career because it was a different world. later in my career, and a lot of it had to do with the Florida pill mill crisis, believe it
yes.
or not.
Yeah.
I worked in Akron, Ohio. The Akron Canton Airport had a $75 round-trip flight down to the Fort Lauderdale airport, and we would literally have addicts get on the Akron Canton flight down to Fort Lauderdale, go to four clinics, get Percocets from all four, and split them with the dealer that paid for the flight to go down. So we started to see a flood of narcotics in the second part of my career. And at the end of my career, of course, you know, we could do two a day narcotic overdoses. So I saw the entire shift of what was really going on. I also had kids, right? And my children, I have a 40-year-old daughter and 35-year-old twins. You can't talk to anybody from that generation who has not lost a contemporary.
Yeah, my kids
from high school
yes.
or college to narcotic overdose,
Oxycontin.
Either intentional
yeah.
or suicidal,
yeah.
depression. You know, this is a very interesting society these days. Our kids are coming out from behind the mask in an experience during COVID that we never lived through. So you,
yeah.
you can't discount people's needs, citizens' needs for navigating through the, you know, we're not even going to get into national politics and the fear that people have, you
mm-hmm.
know, be it a gender issue or, you know, other progressive type of things. You know, people have concerns, people have anxiety. So the finding of a natural alternative for me way back when was important. But what I found is that in my 8.5 years, and I have a phrase for everything, I have a phrase for this one too. On the way to legal adult use, we found that cannabis is actually unbelievable medicine. So medical has always been kind of a useful idiot, so to speak, to the advocates that want legalization, right?
Yeah.
Everybody knew that they'd be able to move it forward a little bit better, easier, medical, and this and that. And the ultimate goal for the advocates is legal adult use.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that if it's done properly, safely. Obviously, I'm an advocate for Amendment 3. But the key is the medical side of cannabis is unbelievably fascinating. We've lost 60 years of modern research because we're still in federal Schedule 1 designation. That's a crime in and of itself. I have cancer patients that I know could be benefiting if we had 60 years of research on the effects of the plant of cannabis on certain cancers, right? We see people reducing their narcotics, reducing their benzodiazepines, using it to supplant their alcohol consumption, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But the point is you have to educate patients to the extent of how to best use it, and then you have to free them up emotionally from their attachment to pharma. So I explain to patients, listen, you're never going to hear from me if you're on 8 Percocet and 800 of gabapentin. And believe me, that's not atypical in this day and age. I like to say if you've been placed on tramadol by your doctor, that means he doesn't have any idea what to do with you anymore for pain.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So there are certain patient categories that we just know they're coming in for that assistance to reduce their pharma load. But I always tell them, I'm not anti-pharma. I'm pro best balance. I'm pro sweet spot.
Mm-hmm.
And if sweet spot for you is 4 Percocet and 200 of gabapentin, then that's a big win. That's a win for everybody. So it's never either or. That's the first concept.
Okay.
The second concept is the empowerment of the patient, because it's the patient's motivation that leads to the reduction of medications. They're not going to reduce medications because their pain management doc wants them to, or because Dr. Barry wants them to. They're going to reduce their medications because they want to do it. They hate the side effects, right? They hate the cost of their medication. The medicines don't really work well for them anymore, but they're still addicted physically to them. So it's the motivation of the patient, quite frankly, with the education that my expert staff gives the patient, but the plant delivers because it's medicine. And once again, it was medicine long before all these other modern medicines. So I was telling my patients, we're going to utilize modern technology, modern oncology, modern surgical techniques, and yes, in fact, modern pharma. But we're going to bring in that plant also as an augmentation to your health and wellness.
Okay.
And when you educate people appropriately, they're empowered to make change. And I'm telling you, Kathy, I would invite you in any day. And we've had, listen, it's important to know who the politicians are that have come in. We've had Representative Buchanan in our office. We've had Senator Gruters in our office. We just had a conversation with Congressman Stubbe up in D.C. Nikki Fried has been in through our office, Carlos Guillermo Smith, Anna Escamani. I play both sides of the aisle because what I know, it's only the appropriate education of our leaders that are going to lead to positive change. And, yeah. and that's my commitment to my patients. And I do have that conversation with patients, the difference between our care and our clinic and others. And I don't put down others. I just accentuate the importance of what we do.
Okay. So it sounds like are the majority of your patients coming in where their presenting issue is a pain management issue?
Sleep, pain, anxiety.
Okay.
Right. Those would be the three main categories, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And that's pretty consistent. But we're very proud to be the referral for a lot of the docs in the area that can't yet do this. Listen, there's things that are standing in the way of the advancement of cannabis in Florida. A lot of the hospital systems won't yet let their doctors participate both on hospital staff and do medical cannabis. Mm. You may have four partners in a group. Two may want to do it. Two don't want to do it. The attorney in the group, right, may so say, you know what, we can't risk our DEA. Mm. So there's things that stand in the way, and some of them are going to take 8 to 10 to 15 years to work out mm-hmm. to a certain extent. Cannabis is not yet taught in the med school curriculums, right,
yeah.
but I'm proud to say that I give a yearly or a every semester lecture to the students up at LECOM now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's once again that advancement, that glass half full, you know, side of things. And, you know, we're going to continue to be here every day doing what we do, which is making sure that patients have the appropriate, safe, educated access to a plant that they are desiring, but that's helpful.
Okay.
And it makes us all feel pretty good around here. It's a happy practice. We have happy patients. A lot yet to be done. But surely much better than it was.
Yeah, so the evolution of understanding continues. I did want to ask you quickly, and I know we could do a whole show on this, but for people listening, and again, it's getting into that direct-to-consumer segment where there might be more pitfalls or real serious issues than people are aware of. Tell me about Kratom. What is it, and what are the risks? In about a minute.
Kratom is another plant-based substance that's been used for years in various ways.
Mm-hmm.
It actually has effects upon a different receptor system than cannabis does. Cannabis works on the endocannabinoid system. Kratom more so within the mu receptor system, which is a much more destructive system to the extent of side effects. The mu receptors are those that control breathing, heart rate, right, mm-hmm. things of that nature. That's why
alcohol
affects the mu receptors, opiates, benzodiazepines. That's why you can't combine alcohol and opiates and benzodiazepines, alcohol and Xanax. That can kill you.
You stop breathing.
Right? That will cause you to stop breathing. Kratom, unfortunately, has some byproducts, one of which very important to watch out for, everybody, called 7-OH, which you can actually find sometimes even in the gas station environments. That does have addictive potential and abuse potential. So, you know, there's cannabinoids out there. There's other plant-based substances that are out there. I think an educated, you know, and thank
as
you
an
so
alternative,
much
you mean.
For what you do. And it's once again an honor to have been here with you. And
yeah.
We'll come back again whenever you ask. But yeah, there's other things out there. It's always consumer beware, educated consumer, especially when it comes to healthcare. Is clearly the only way to go.
Yeah, what we choose to put in our bodies, we need to know what we're doing. We need some good advice. So it's great to have you both here to talk about your work and what's going on in Florida. You are trusted in the community, so I thank you for your time. And your clinic is Compassionate Cannabis. If people want to avail themselves of the education you offer, you all are in Venice, and I appreciate you being. Do you all have a website that people can look at if they want?
Yeah, we do. It's www.venicecare, all one word, VENICECARE.com.
All right, yeah. Everybody.
We got our Facebook Compassionate Cannabis Clinic page, and you know we have a number of podcasts that are on there, and the whole bit. But listen, anytime we have a chance to you know, contribute to the public education and what you do, Kathy. It, once again, such a pleasure to join you. And anytime you need us, we're happy to be here.
Thank you, Dr. Berry.
Yeah, no, WSLR, too. You guys do great. It's not the first time. I recognize the scene behind you. I've had the opportunity to be in there physically as well. So keep doing what you guys do best.
We appreciate that. We appreciate our listeners. Everybody, thanks so much for listening. You've been listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Make it a great day.